It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1194.1C0612, certificate number 29113, Sovereign Citizens.
This courtroom is trying to process me as state property. See this fictitious name statement? Asher Edwards, spelled in all capital letters. This is not my name. This name was issued to me without my consent, and you cannot legally process me through this courtroom with this without this name in all capital letters that was issued without my consent.
I have not read anyone on the internet suggest that you are Q. And I think that's a big oversight. You have a lot of, I mean, you served in the Trump administration. You,
I did.
Yeah. Let's be honest, Ken.
Nobody thinks I'm JFK Jr. either. That's what really hurts.
Yeah, that does.
I look a little more like JFK Jr. than that weird guy with the beard.
But I think almost certainly there are Omnibus listeners, because we're a very popular podcast that's popular around the world and across America. We're just as popular in red states as blue.
Throughout all time.
There are almost certainly people listening to the show that are followers of the QAnon conspiracy theory. And I just want to say, welcome to the show. We're going to be talking about a lot
of... Don't we have to say their catchphrases so they know we're on their side? What do they say?
We are together, all for one, for all.
Ride the lightning.
Ride the lightning.
Release the Kraken, and then ride the lightning on your Kraken.
Yeah, there are some phrases. There are some slogans. Everybody likes a slogan. But I really think that they haven't cast the Q net widely enough. It's clear I'm not Q.
Why?
Most of my fans are women in their 30s that have tattoos of rabbits and wear their hair kind of short in a jaunty way. Most of your fans are survivalists and people in their 70s.
Look, both of our fans have blue hair. Both of our fans are women with blue hair.
It's true.
It's just for different reasons.
It's true. That's right. I feel like within the overarching conspiracy theory community, there's too much of a fixation and a fascination with Hollywood stars when I think it's really trivia show hosts that give off the vibe of being in service.
You think we have all the secret depravity
of all of our alien masters
that needs to be unveiled?
Yeah, I do.
There's just not that many trivia show hosts. It would be a very small conspiracy.
It gets like to be a larger number all the time, doesn't it?
If you want to say all show business actors are lizard men pedophiles, I mean, there's hundreds of them to go after. There's just not a lot of game show hosts.
But now that Buzzy Cohen is in the legion of game show hosts, I think it blows the doors open.
Now that I'm not on The Chase anymore, I can admit
that everyone on the chase is actually in the service of the lizard man.
Agreed. What is your confidence that we are living in a world as it seems, as opposed to a world that is governed by
shadowy forces?
Shadowy forces that mask their true intentions.
It's like a nearly 100%. Are you setting aside larger kind of metaphysical, the world is not what they seem questions, like, you know, the possibility that we are living in some kind of
metaverse?
Sure.
Okay.
Or Xenu's simulation.
Oh,
you know, a computer simulation on Xenu's Game Boy.
Do you worry that someone might red pill you and all of a sudden you realize you're living in a pod?
No, I hope that's what happens. No, if you leave aside larger metaphysical concerns about just the nature of reality,
right?
If you mean, for example, life on Earth,
is or life what in you the see West, as green the same as what I see when I say green, Kim?
I would say nearly 100% confidence that the well understood Wikipedia version of reality is in fact correct.
So I also feel very confident that the world is as it seems for the most part. And every once in a while, some people enter into a conspiracy to price fix the pork bellies.
It's always something banal and awful.
Yeah.
And usually they get found out.
The United Fruit Company is trying to overthrow some South American government. But for the most part, yeah, any of the popular conspiracy theories would just be way too complicated for dumb humans to really pull off.
Occam's razor, right?
Right.
We all know all the kinds of regular awful evil that are going on in the world today, and it's all the people you expect doing all the same exact awful things to protect their position and privilege. And that's pretty much, that explains everything, I think.
Yeah, right. But I think that
there's not a cool one, which is a bummer. You want to have a cool one.
A cool conspiracy.
Yes. Yeah.
Like a cool kid one.
Just a more interesting theory. I think it's understated. I mean, it's often said that conspiracy theorists just want order and explanation in a random world. But I think it's underappreciated how much they also want something that's just more interesting than what they get at their job or on their phones.
Well, I think that that clearly the majority of people do not believe in conspiracy theories, but a significant minority do, and it crosses the political aisle.
Seems to be on the rise.
On the rise. People people of all stripes are looking for explanations for why the world is unfair.
When you say it crosses the political aisle, really only one of the two major parties is nominating its conspiracy theorists to the House and Senate.
That's absolutely right. So
let's not pretend it's a purely bipartisan scenario.
It's not a bipartisan scenario in the upper realms of the two political parties.
That's true.
But there are
some guy you're sitting next to in a bar might be equally likely to believe something crazy, whether he voted for Obama, Trump, or Lyndon LaRouche.
There are a lot of people in the blue states that believe that the system is rigged, that it's controlled either by the banks or by shadowy forces of funded by conservative billionaires who make the, you know, the cops are all part of a global white supremacist, you know, cabal.
Russian bots.
Uh-huh, Russian bots.
That was a lot of good right-thinking liberals were convinced that, you know, massive Russian operations were overthrowing the U.S. government. And now that really hasn't aged that well, because we can see that Russia can't even overthrow the Ukrainian government.
Yeah, Russia seems to be really good right now at overthrowing their own government.
Maybe that's what the bot farms are doing.
But there is a tendency increasingly, I think we see, for people to search for supra-reality explanations for why.
And it's an extremis. Like you saw it on the left when the questions were, how could Trump have won? You see it on the right now that it's the questions of how did they overthrow our beloved president?
Yeah, and it often involves China. It often involves the Clintons. You know, it involves Jeffrey Epstein now. You know, there's no limit to conspiracies if you want to shop around.
The royal family, British royal family. That's why Belize and Barbados are dumping them.
Hmm. Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Belize is out because the royal family has
the
weirdos in it?
The royal family faked the moon landing.
Oh, of course they did. I always wonder about the moon landing, like...
What Princess Margaret had to do with it?
Well, and what the profit motive was. But there is a... I think in the United States, but it may surprise you to learn that it is increasingly a global phenomenon.
Hmm. Are we exporting it?
Well, you know, actually, there's some evidence that it started in Canada.
Yeah.
But then America took it and ran with it, of course, just like Neil Young and
Second City TV, yeah, or whatever.
But so now we are exporting it, our cranky versions of it. But there's a movement that is kind of undergirds a lot of conservative conspiracy thinking. It's maybe it at its most distilled, the idea that the federal government is illegitimate and that the states have not only rights that exclude the federal government, but that at a certain point along the way, somewhere in the history of the United States, what we think of as the federal government is actually an extensive charade,
depending on whether it's Canadians coming up with this theory,
and that that there is no longer a valid federal government, and because of that, the rights that we might ascribe to the federal government are no longer legitimately held by that entity. And so they revert to us as individual people. And
that would be convenient.
That would be nice.
If you have reason to believe that the government is inconveniencing you in any way.
And a lot of that, a lot of the belief system of this cadre, and of course those ideas that the federal government is no longer legitimate and that it is in service of a global enterprise, mm-hmm, rather than actually representing the people of the United States, it's kind of retconned itself, and found evidence, you know, throughout American history.
I feel like I used to have to explain retcon to you, and now you can just use it so ably in a sentence. I'm so proud.
Well, you know, we met a long time ago. I spent a lot of time in the global nerd sphere, but you should feel proud because you did. I think you were the first to explain retconning.
It's so useful.
I was like, you say what now? Retcon? Ah.
Look how it comes in handy here in geopolitics and sociology. Not just to explain whether or not Superman's wearing the red underwear anymore.
But what's interesting is, you know, it's a grab bag of beliefs, and not everybody has to believe that lizard people are living underneath a pizza parlor to believe that the laws of the land are mutable.
That's the beauty of the sovereign citizen thing, is that you're very into the result, and you're willing to work backwards to whatever degree is plausible for you to get that result, which is the government don't have no hold on you.
And we have to be careful, I think, when thinking about these conspiracies as being the province of people that are less educated and, you know, and financially more at a disadvantage, and also thinking of them as predominantly Southern and white, because they have appeal that's patchwork, but kind of global, and it appeals to a lot of people you wouldn't expect. But I think generally it starts with being at odds with the government, right? It would have to, right? If the government seems to be serving you, you're not going to turn against it for no reason, right? You're not going to say, those darn police keep patrolling my neighborhood and making me feel safe.
Or I paid a fair amount of taxes this year. In fact, very small compared to my income.
Right.
This is going great.
Or any other nation of the world. Right. And so the sovereign citizen movement, what we see start to take on its present form as a result of, I mean, it always has a big explosion in membership and in devotees related to economic crises, related to situations where people end up on the wrong side of debt, on the wrong, you know, their mortgage is upside down,
or the medical debt.
It was really connected to the 1980s farm foreclosure era, and has showed it's the beginnings of its modern resurgence in the 2007-08 mortgage
Great crisis. Recession.
And of course, COVID has given it a lot of fuel. It's really poured gas on the fire, because the idea of government overreach and government.
Suddenly things I want to do and things I'm allowed to do
are restricted.
Have less overlap than usual.
By these entities that don't have authority to do it. And when you believe that, then you look for reasons why that's true. It's not just that the federal government has the authority to do it except when I don't like it. You want it to be true across the board.
And everyone does this. Everyone has their own intuitions about what is right for them, and then they look for reasons. It's not the other way around. Nobody's a blank slate researching historical theory until they find the most explanatory and minimalist one, and then they say, well, that's my philosophy.
Yeah, and that's true definitely of the sovereign citizen movement. It's not a thing that organically comes out of constitution scholarship, where people go, wait a minute, I never thought of that. You know,
is any of it defensible at any academic or historical level?
Well, let's dive into that, shall we? The movement really starts with a man by the name of Henry Lamont Beach. And we're going to see that every major character in this story has a serial killer name.
Or like 19th century Congregationalist minister.
Yeah.
What is Henry Beecher, what's his name?
Henry Lamont Beach
Henry
is...
Lamont Beach, what's his era?
In 1969, he was a fellow... This may surprise you, but during the mid-century, during the World War II era, there was an active American Nazi movement that was sympathetic to the Nazis. This is kind of pre-World War II. They fell out of fashion during the war for obvious reasons. But after the war, the sort of lost and lonely...
Ex-Bund?
Yeah, the lorn, lonely... Nazis.
You got a feel for them.
Had to kind of figure out what to do, and they regrouped and became part of this, you know, and I don't mean to dismiss the whole conservative movement of the 60s by sort of appelling them to Nazism, but the, you know, those white nationalist movements kind of percolated under the scene throughout the 60s. And so Henry Lamont Beach kind of started the conflation of white supremacy and sovereign citizenship by positing that with the passage of the 14th Amendment, freeing the slaves, mm-hmm. there was a new kind of citizenship that was granted to freed slaves. That, you know, and that this is the citizenship granted by the 14th Amendment.
It's secondary to what U.S. citizens prior to the 1860s would have enjoyed?
Exactly. Okay. There was a kind of native citizenship.
I see. That he has.
That he has. And that people in the United States pre-14th Amendment, you know, intrinsically had. And the 14th Amendment established citizenship for blacks that was, in his estimation, a different category of citizenship. And this was taken up by, you know, like Henry Lamont Beach didn't gather to himself a ton of followers, but a man by the name of William Potter Gale, in, you know, sort of in the same era, took those ideas. And William Potter Gale is a very curious creature, because his father was Jewish and from a long line of Orthodox Jews, and they escaped from Europe. They escaped from the pogroms.
Wow.
pre-World War I, right. Really. And came to the United States, you know, to escape antisemitism. Their name was Grobifker in Europe, and his father changed the name to Gale.
And that's an all-timer for Ellis Island contraction, by the way. Just all the consonants are now gone, and there's an L instead.
We're gonna leave an E at the end. And William Potter Gale enlisted in the army in World War II. He listed his religion as Hebrew, and he became a lieutenant colonel. He served under MacArthur.
This is an all-time jazz singer type disappointment. When you're, if you're a rabbi and your kid becomes not just a Al Jolson style entertainer, but a white supremacist conspiracy thinker.
Right, a white supremacist who goes on to found some of the major kind of white nationalist groups in the United States, starting with Posse Comitatus, which was which in Latin means the county is the. So in order for the state to be illegitimate, there had to be a reason. The 14th Amendment established a different kind of citizenship in their minds, but there had to be a reason why their own citizenship, native citizenship, had been so thoroughly disempowered. I mean, how could there be, how could the two citizenships be equalized if one was clearly real and the other was clearly imposed?
Is that what they're trying to get to? The thing that has cheapened U.S. citizenship is that it's been applied to people other than white males like themselves?
Yes. And okay. And then by, you know, but through retroaction, native citizenship also, whatever, the, you know, the idea of true citizenship was also changed, cheapened. And by a kind of misreading and a garbled reading of history and law, they cobbled together a philosophy, a political understanding of American citizenship that that is predicated on the idea that when a child is born in the United States, they are actually an instrument of collateral that is leveraged on a global financial marketplace to as collateral for U.S. foreign debt. And this is all related back to one of our favorite topics, the elimination of the gold standard by FDR in 1933.
Wait, so lacking the gold standard, these people now believe that American babies are some kind of security or fiat currency or something?
Yes, because American money is no longer real, because it's no longer backed by gold. Mm-hmm. The future earning potential of an American child is used as collateral against our debts, foreign and domestic.
And they think this is actually just some unspoken assumption of how the world markets work, or do they think there's some secret market in which actual populations are traded?
This is a secret market.
I see.
And the evidence for it is that when a child is born, their name is written on their birth certificate in all capital letters.
Not wrong.
Those all capital letters, combined with the issuance of a Social Security number when you're born, creates an entity which is separate from you in actual reality. The all capital letters child on the birth certificate is what they describe as a straw man, which is your identity as a tradable commodity.
This is weirdly philosophical, more philosophical than I would have expected their worldview to be.
It's
kind of an epistemological view of identity and birth certificates.
It's very unusual. And, you know, and this is, it's hard to look at the kind of sort of states' rights, sovereign people driving around with license plates that they made themselves on a color copier and see that the foundations of this argument are
typography on a birth certificate.
Well, and related to an idea of, I mean, it predates the Matrix as an idea that you're
a cog.
Yeah.
They're extracting value and energy from you and you're not even aware of it. Shadowy trader somewhere. Is there an idea that they're picking you by name? They're going through birth certificates and being like,
"No, this is true. This is true of all all people born in America that are, you know, given a birth certificate and a social security number."
But they're not being traded individually. These are like tranches of population.
Well, what's interesting is that the Treasury, the federal government, creates at your birth an account associated with you.
Is this true? Probably in a computer somewhere.
But this is an actual bank account, which they put cash into.
Oh, I'd love that.
A large amount of whatever, I guess, you know, fake American money goes into this account, and this represents this is, you know, against your future earnings. This cash, is deposited in your straw man identity. And then all transactions that happened, all government transactions, driver's licenses, marriage licenses, fishing licenses, are all granted to your fake persona, your straw man.
I see.
And that you actually have the right and ability to exercise your individuation, to separate yourself from your straw man identity.
All the inconvenient things about government are only applying to that Treasury account.
Exactly.
And if you cease to identify with that, then the man can't put you down.
And this is all a result of a kind of not loophole, a schism in the law, where American law, as enshrined by the Constitution and misinterpreted or garbled by the half understood perusal of legal documents, that law was founded in English common law. But that in 1871, when the District of Columbia Organic Act was passed, which described the United States as a corporation. And they weren't...
What is the 1871 District of Columbia Organic Act to the rest of us who do not believe in this theory?
It is an act that establishes the District of Columbia...
Oh, I see.
...in a certain, you know, as a...
Washington's not a city, now there's a new territory.
There. Exactly.
Okay.
They used in this act the word corporation simply to mean an incorporation of, you know, of
yeah.
the city. But it's been taken in a different context to mean that at the incorporation of Washington, D.C., the United States became an economic corporation.
In a business sense.
In a business sense. And so common law, then, according to this formulation, was replaced with Admiralty law.
What?
Which
is this, like British naval law?
Yeah, but it's British naval law that's used to regulate commerce on the seas.
Well, I think this should actually apply.
And Admiralty courts.
I think maritime law should have precedence.
Are separate courts. And you're absolutely right. We should be governed by maritime law. Unfortunately, we're not.
I'd get a free serving of grog every day. My enemies might be flogged occasionally. I think there's no downside.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But what this means is that U.S. government officials and judges and really like anyone above the sort of county level is actually in service of a foreign power, because the U.S. government is
weird corporation from 1871 on, which is not
the actual United States.
So the current government is not the successor state to what the founders founded.
Right, right. There's this imposed government, and that was
cagey of them to put all this in a little act, changing the city status of the District of Columbia.
Yeah, and there you can find, you know, and what this requires is that they ignore
probably a ton of court precedent.
Well, not just court precedent, but you know, they ignore the Article 6 of the Constitution. But it's all based on a kind of partial reading, a convenient reading of laws based on an edition of Black's Law Dictionary that is that was obsolete 25 years ago. But you know, it's a sort of a pick and choose. It's a goulash. But what it means is that you are you're no longer responsible to pay taxes.
Sure, it's a different country.
Your debt is absolved because it's all attached to this fake self. If you declare yourself sovereign and independent of this whole, and there are a couple of different terms for it. It's called asservation or expatriation. You can, by submitting forms to the government.
So this doesn't happen to everyone automatically. You have to go through a process to become a non-fake U.S. citizen.
Yes, you can declare it, and that requires that, weirdly, that you submit paperwork to these courts.
To the fake government.
But this paperwork, if it's worded properly, mm-hmm. and a lot of the theory is based in a kind of, it's not exactly numerological, but it's based in a belief that the grammar and punctuation of legal documents they are signifiers of this separate truth.
They're secret messages if you put two spaces after a period or something?
Exactly that. The fact that these documents are all caps means that the United States of America in capital letters and the United States of America where just the U, the S, and the A are capitalized are different entities.
Hold on. I just want to make sure I get this right. Which one's the good one?
So this is complicated because they do use all caps as a way of communicating.
I've seen them communicate in all caps many times on the internet.
but in fact, United States of America in all caps and the United States of America where it's normally
initial
capitalized.
Title capitalization.
I think that, which one is the real one? Well, there are like four or five different ones. There's the United States of America in not capitalized. There's also, and I guess this is as good a time as any to talk about David Wynn Miller. David Wynn Miller was a tool and die welder that had at the age of 25 a profound transformative experience where, according to him, he was operated on, both kidneys and his adrenal glands were removed, and he died.
Oh.
And as they were—
I hate when that happens.
I know. And as they were doing an autopsy and they had his heart outside of his body, his heart restarted, and apparently they immediately put it back in him and patched him up. And during this time, he had a revelation. Now, the thing about David Wynn Miller is that everything he says suggests that he has, that he is a schizophrenic, that he has a tremendous sort of delusional, maybe bipolar one, mental illness. Mm-hmm. And you would not want to talk about him. You wouldn't want to mock someone who was mentally ill. It's just that his beliefs have become, kind of, like an undergirding gospel of this entire movement.
So you don't want to mock him, but you don't want to accept him as a legal authority either.
No. And what he did was in 1988, develop a new grammar, as he described it, an understanding of language, and in fact, a new legal language that can be used to short circuit the actual language used in law.
Mm. If you have the secret language.
If you have the secret language, which he called correct, and this is all in caps, correct-sentence-structure-communication-parse-syntax-grammar.
You can see why no one's ever come up with this before.
Or quantum language. And quantum language has some of the following tenets. One, only okay. Nouns have legal meaning.
Interesting.
And nouns have immutable legal meaning. So a noun is not... You cannot use a noun in two different senses, right? Like adjectives.
Like corporation cannot just be incorporating a city and incorporating a business.
Exactly. Adjectives don't change the meaning of nouns. So nouns have legal meaning, and legal sentences, in order for them to be legally binding, have to have 13 words.
Exactly 13 words.
13 words.
The number of colonies.
And more nouns. That's right. More nouns than verbs.
That's okay.
And they must start with a prepositional phrase.
How come all these guys with these ideas about, specific ideas about good language all have the worst prose style when you read their manifestos?
Well, when you read anything written in correct sentence structure, communication, parse, syntax, grammar, or as it's, I think, shorthand known as quantum language, it is not readable.
Not Hemingway-esque prose.
It's not understandable.
But at least it has 13 words and nouns only mean themselves.
Every sentence needs to start with a prepositional phrase. So they all start with for the or with the.
It's like a New York Times headline.
and curiously, any word that starts with a noun followed by two consonants,
what?
Like accept or accede.
A vowel followed by two consonants, I see.
Those words in documents voids all contracts.
You can't mention any word which has a vowel followed by two consonants. You can't make any law to regulate an otter, for example.
No.
Or you can't talk about...
You wouldn't put that in there. That is a noun.
An aspen tree.
It has both an immutable meaning and also negates all contracts.
Almond, for example. The sovereign citizens know that we're powerless against almonds.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Well, you would never... Why would you need a law against almonds?
Or umbrellas?
David Wynn Miller, a lot of this began, it may not surprise you, with a bitter divorce. And this often happens, that a contentious divorce...
Leads to a discovery of a
new language.
Alternate legal system?
According to David Wynn Miller, and it's very hard to take anything he says at face value, but
well, especially if it doesn't start with a prepositional phrase.
He was in a child custody battle with his ex-wife and filed 67 different child custody appeals, appeared in court as his own attorney.
Judges hate him.
67 times.
Defeat family court with this weird trick.
And a lot of what became sovereign citizen doctrine involves this idea of using a kind of legalese or pseudo legalese, partly influenced by David Wynn Miller, to file what are called,
nuisance
lawsuits.
I wonder if this happens more in divorce court or tax court. I bet it's I bet it's a close race.
Right, it is. And often the two are affect the same people. Most sovereign citizens appear as their own attorney in court filings. A lot of them believe that blue and black ink are only used by people within the
The fake government?
The fake government. Okay. And so they,
what do they use?
They write a lot of documents in red ink. Mm. They will only sign documents with their fingerprint, often in blood.
Because signatures have been tainted somehow by
signatures are connected to your social security number and your driver's license. They're whatever, their validity is negated.
What's the timeline of these beliefs coalescing into a thing that is understood, like an alternate legal strategy? Is this a 70s and 80s, or is this more recently?
No, it's in the 70s and 80s. So William Potter Gale, having formed Posse Comitatus, and Posse Comitatus believed that the sheriff of the county was the highest political office that was legitimate. Because the sheriff would be elected directly by the citizens of the county, and that sheriff would be law enforcement.
So even state level stuff is
Because they're imposing taxes, they are making sort of sweeping. They're operating departments of motor vehicles and so forth, which they don't have the authority to do. But the sheriff, you elect directly, and then that sheriff enforces whatever your right to property.
I mean, maybe this is stereotyping, but it does kind of accord with a view where the kind of person who gets elected sheriff might be their kind of guy.
That's right. And
conveniently.
And so the Posse Comitatus in the 1970s tried first to take over Alpine County, California, which is a county east of Stockton, California. Okay. And they, they moved there and they ran their own candidate for sheriff with the idea, and it's a fairly unpopulated but large county. They ran their own sheriff candidate, and unfortunately the attempt to take over Alpine County failed. The incumbent sheriff was reelected. So they moved on, and at a little while later they tried the same trick in Tigerton, Wisconsin. The idea was that, and this was a thing we saw during the kind of white nationalist period in the late 80s and 90s
in the
Northwest, the idea that they were going to create a homeland, right? A white homeland that was governed by locally elected law enforcement, but with no, with no relationship really to the United States. But it was really only in the 90s that it kind of coalesced into a movement that started to distance itself from white nationalism. That the 14th Amendment citizenship started to become less of a governing idea. And it became much more the idea of this, the secret identity, the split person, the dual.
If you can get out from under your Treasury Department account,
exactly. And a lot of sovereign citizens were they didn't even believe that the term sovereign citizen reflected them, and they think of themselves as strange, but that their status is seeking the truth. So they're not a citizen. They are seeking the truth.
They don't have a name. They're just a gerund now?
It is just a gerund. And a lot of this came as a result of people searching for ways to get out of debt.
Yeah.
And that's what the connection to to failed marriages, but also to mortgage crises
and tax liens,
and liens actually figure in as a tool used by sovereign citizens.
By the deep state.
No, by sovereign citizens resisting the deep state. So the idea that your divided person, that you were not responsible for debts incurred, meant that when you and this is at this point in the mid 90s, it starts to become a movement that's promulgated by charlatans who are offering these solutions as kind of kits.
Yeah.
Kits that come with boilerplate legalese that's if you file the right paper at the right point in time, written precisely the right way, often affixed with a postage stamp somewhere on it that then somehow the postage stamp,
yeah,
you know, takes it out of the realm of the local court, that this document will actually sever this relationship, that the courts will see it's written in secret hieroglyphics and they'll go, oh, they've unlocked the code and they're hereby not only released from debt. And I mean, one of the very basic codes is just to, when you receive a bill, to just write acceptance for value across the top of it.
I've never thought of that. It seems so, now that you say it though, it seems so obvious.
Well, what acceptance for value does is it activates the secret account that was established by the deep state at your birth, and the bills are paid from the secret balance. Account.
Smart. You can't say it's not smart.
It's pretty smart. You can basically say in response to any sort of police order that you do not consent. Right. And by revoking your consent, you are, again, establishing your sovereignty connected to your status as an original citizen, a freeman on the land.
I would have thought people would have discovered this in the age of the internet. You know, you've got a problem like bills you can't pay or something, and suddenly you find a list of very specific instructions new to you purporting to get you out of it. Of course you're going to follow those steps. But I guess it predates the web, thanks to what we see on the far right now a lot, a network of grifters who are claiming to be believers but are actually just in on the con.
If you look back in 1996, the Montana Freemen were, this was part of that white nationalist movement, trying to abdicate from the United States. Terry Nichols, who bombed in Oklahoma City, was was very influenced by this idea.
Well, it didn't go well for him at his trial. He must not have said the right things or used the right color of ink.
But the ideas, it may surprise you to learn that there are the current sovereign citizen movement is actually more diverse than just white people in middle America.
So it's reached kind of the fight the power wing of other populations?
It has.
Communities?
It has. And it has deeper roots dating back to the early part of the century. A man by the name of Timothy Drew, who was a black man from the East Coast in 1913, had a similar kind of revelation that that African Americans were actually Moors. They were descendants of the Moroccan Moorish kings,
mm-hmm.
and were therefore governed by the tenets of the Moroccan-American Friendship Treaty, which was signed in 1786.
All right, right. Morocco being one of the first foreign powers to recognize the new United States.
Morocco, the first foreign power to recognize the United States. And this connection to the Moors meant that African Americans were actually, in one sense, Native American citizens dating back to the founding of the country. And there was a kind of offshoot of it that believed that that the Moors actually were had the status of Native Americans.
Ah, right, because that's a population that does have its own kind of recognized sovereignty. So you would definitely want to piggyback off something like that. You'd get similar results.
So Timothy Drew kind of he saw Islam as the native religion of African Americans because of their Moorish roots. Mm-hmm. He discovered a Quran that was kind of a mishmash of some Quranic verses, some other books that he seems to have found in a bus station, and his own revelation, which is known as the Circle 7 Quran. And he founded the Moorish Science Temple.
Doesn't this predate Elijah Muhammad or other kinds of Black Islamic movements?
It does, by a couple of decades. Uh-huh. He moved the Moorish Science Temple, the headquarters of it, to Chicago in 1925, and it actually became a political force in Chicago. At one point, having 30,000 members.
Black Chicagoans were converting to Islam, or at least this version thereof.
And actually, Nation of Islam is a descendant of the Moorish Science Temple.
Mm.
Wallace Ford Muhammad in 1930 separated from the Moorish Temple and formed Nation of Islam. And as an extension of the Moorish science community, the idea that African Americans were actually Native Americans, an offshoot of that formed as the Ouachita Nation, which was based around New Orleans, and it was an idea. It was kind of connected to a Creole identity.
There is no Ouachita indigenous people.
Or? There are,
oh, okay,
but the Ouachita Nation is unconnected to them, and a lot of the basis of the Ouachita Nation idea was that when Napoleon sold Louisiana to the United States, if you read the document carefully, you understand that Napoleon only sold the streets of New Orleans.
Very, very slipshod work by Napoleon's attorneys.
To the United States.
Or I guess smart. He was trying to keep the non-street parts of Louisiana.
Well, that would be kind of smart.
He really outmaneuvered Jefferson on this.
But unfortunately,
did Jefferson get the sidewalks?
No, that land actually, reverts to the native population.
Yeah, so Napoleon didn't do it right.
Which is, this Ouachita Nation. Ouachita Nation and the Moorish Science Temple exist today, and both are active members of the sovereign citizen movement, and they employ a lot of like adverse possession techniques. There's a sense that in a reading of the law, that by using hostile possession, they can kind of, go into a building, claim it. This was a big feature in the mortgage situation in 2008 through present, where, structures that were foreclosed upon, they could break in, claim ownership of it as a form of reparation. And, using those, then file suit for ownership of the property, again, by using a convoluted, the sort of pseudo-legal documents in the style of David Wynn Miller. There are versions of Miller's language that aren't so focused on where the semicolons are. Mm-hmm. Like, David Wynn Miller actually changed his name to colon David/Wynn:Miller.
See, and most people, the colon comes at the end.
And by doing that, he established himself as a new legal entity. And there's a lot of that being used in the nuisance filings. So far, no one in Ouachita Nation has successfully taken ownership of a property.
To what degree is this any kind of single movement? Like, I assume the white nationalist offshoots of this movement want nothing to do with the Black Muslim offshoots of it, and vice versa, right?
Well, there is no organized national leader.
Yeah.
And it's all built around gurus and people who
grifters.
You know, grifters and people now who have internet channels where they say, here's the secret. These are the documents you need to file.
It's perfect for one weird trick internet culture. The internet has just showed us that people love to click on one weird trick.
And what ends up happening is that although there's never been an instance where any of these techniques have produced a victory in court.
That was my next question.
There are a lot of instances where someone will get fined $20 for not having a license on their dog and will file 60 different, like gibberish legal documents to the point that the state drops the charges.
Yeah.
Where they're just annoying. Like, you know what? We can't even read what you're submitting. But you know, there are systems in place that are meant to enable citizens to file suits or file reason documents, right? And to make that
some recourse,
an institutional process. But it misused, you just get a situation where it's like, look, this is a fine under $100 for somebody driving without a bicycle license. And those are then touted as success stories on the web and examples of how this technique actually, you know, no one has managed to get any money from the government from their secret account. But if you go online, there are tons and tons of explanatory videos of how, you know, your money, which was put into this account under your birth name, it actually belongs to you, even though it's fake. And you're entitled to this money if you just send the right combination of forms.
Many cons in the past have been built on similar premises that, you know, you may already be a winner. Your ancestors had rights to this. People with your last name have rights to that legacy and so forth. And lots of shady lawyers and dishonest non-lawyers have taken advantage.
Another thing that they do within the sovereign citizen world is not just file like nuisance legalese documents to get out of fines, but they actually then turn that into what's called paper terrorism, situations where they use these legal filings to actually attack judges by filing like spurious liens on their property. Apparently, you can file a lien without needing to prove the validity of the charge.
That comes next.
Yeah. And the lien, once filed, actually puts a shadow over your ownership of property until it can be proved or disproved.
Have you ever had a lien?
No.
I had a contractor come after another contractor at some point. You know, the guy that was doing our kitchen... The guy that was doing the plumbing in our kitchen came after the guy that was doing the countertops came after the main contractor. And as a result, somebody showed up at our door and said, there's a lien against your house. And this was, again, something I hadn't even heard of. I didn't know there was a little countertop war going on.
Did it affect your credit rating for some period?
Probably.
Yeah.
Until their individual spat was resolved.
So the sovereign citizen movement learned that they could use these filings not just as a defense, but as an offense. And a lot of members of the sovereign citizen world have been prosecuted for filing spurious liens, for tax evasion. They often use like forged checks.
So you can go after people that are doing some of these things, these nuisance.
There are a lot of sovereign citizens in jail and often serving long sentences for intimidating their spouse with spurious filings,
yeah.
for buying guns with forged checks. I mean,
this does give them the kind of non-mainstream citizenship they want. If you're incarcerated,
true.
You are a little bit off the grid.
You're a citizen of the jail. There are suggestions that there are up to 300,000 people there are 100,000 people who are hardcore sovereign citizen devotees.
Got the hat.
Another couple hundred thousand that are kind of toying with using some of the techniques, toying with some of the ideas. The Ouachita Nation actually runs a diploma mill university called the City University of Los Angeles. So if anybody ever...
if you want your credentials.
If you go into your psychologist's office and they have a diploma from the City University of Los Angeles, you can be maybe somewhat suspect of it.
You can just yell all your responses to them in capital letters and they can't disagree.
There have been a couple of major court findings that have dismissed the entire philosophy. One in Alberta, Meads versus Meads, again, a divorce case.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Where Meads won in fighting Meads 2, submitted just an avalanche of documentation, all written in you know, prepositional phrases with not two consonants.
Yes, that was the ex-husband.
It was.
No.
And Justice John Rook wrote a big decision kind of that applied then across the whole Commonwealth legal system, saying there's, you know, none of this, this is all gibberish and none of these contentions hold.
I bet that totally stopped them. They were like, oh, wow.
Shut them right down.
I guess there's a legal precedent now by this non-authorized judge.
In Washington State in 2013, the district court issued a finding that when you read it, is so dripping with sarcasm and contempt. Like, it feels like it was written by a young clerk, because you just can't believe the... For a legal document, yeah. It's written in very plain language, and it really ridicules the whole idea.
Yeah, that's what we want. More snarkier legal decisions.
Snarky decisions. But, and I think most famously and most recently, the Cliven Bundy, initially their fight against the BLM in Nevada for having used BLM land to ranch without paying fees, and then their takeover of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge in Oregon
was the basis that we're sovereign citizens and this is our wildlife. That's
right, sovereign citizens. They're BLM has no right to lease this land because
the Napoleon only had got the streets.
That's right. This is national. You know, this is land that belongs to all true organic citizens of the United States.
Yeah.
In most countries that this has spread to, it's also greeted with contempt. But in Australia, the freemen of the land, you may not be surprised to learn, actually have gotten a toehold.
I assume these are not an indigenous group?
Some indigenous groups have allied themselves with the idea. Uh-huh. But no, there's a political party called the Hansen Party in Australia that's actually come up in the omnibus before.
I don't remember this.
It's a wackadoodle conservative slash maybe not quite QAnon party, but...
But nativist and conspiracyist?
Yeah, and nationalist. And there's actually a man by the name of Malcolm Roberts who is in the Australian Senate and has been since the 2015s.
They're ahead of us by maybe a year or two.
And he filed a lot of paperwork in the years in the run-up to his campaign, written in David Wynne Miller syntax.
But with maybe like some good days added?
And of course, a shrimp.
Right.
A Barbie. Both of those are immutable nouns.
Every sentence must begin with a shrimp and a Barbie.
For the Barbie with the shrimp.
And that concludes Sovereign Citizens, entry 1194.10612, certificate number 29113 in the omnibus. Now, obviously, none of this will apply to you as a sovereign citizen of Earth in your time. But John and I were the old kind of American citizen. We were at Omnibus Project, at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick on various kinds of social media. You have the absolute right as a natural citizen to email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. We will only read it if it's in red type.
And signed with your blood.
Please include your bloody fingerprint and make sure there's not a sentence with 14 syllables. We just laugh when we see a miscounted 14-word sentence.
No chance, fool.
No one can stop you from using the post office. In fact, don't even put a stamp on it. They'll have to deliver things if you tell them, if you yell sovereign citizen at the counter.
Just say accepted for value, but do put a stamp on the document itself because that actually makes you a postmaster.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now that you're a postmaster, use your newfound power, abuse your newfound power by sending us random things to Omnibus Project, P.O. Box 55744. Shoreline, Washington, 98155. This came to the P.O. Box addressed only to me, John. So,
well, that seems to be happening a lot lately.
I'm afraid you're out of luck. Paul sent us a copy of a book by his daughter, Kate, and his son-in-law, Joe, called Who is Jesus?
Who is Jesus?
Well, it's a very that's a very easy Jeopardy response. And maybe that's why they wanted to send it to me.
Oh.
This son of God... This only begotten son of the father, it has, look, it has nice woodcut illustrations.
Jesus is the deliverer.
This is far, you know how there's like one good chick tract artist? Yeah. This is way above even his level. This is nice woodcut stuff.
What you find in the sovereign citizen movement is not a ton of appeal to Jesus.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's all based around English common law and misreadings of the Constitution. It's not really
It's the same impulse, except it's, you know, admiralty court findings of the 1700s instead of the Book of Ezekiel.
I mean, the fundamental belief of the founders of the movement that white people are the only true people and everyone else is a mud person.
There's some overlap with,
there might be.
With conservative religion.
There might be.
Well, thank you so much for, I don't know why you thought that would be of interest to us at Omnibus, Paul, but,
well, to one of us at Omnibus,
well, thank you for sending all, so you do want it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, who is Jesus?
See, I thought you wouldn't know. See, you do need this book, John.
Between the two of us, I'm the one that knows who Jesus is less.
You can also, find fellow, like-minded folks online by looking for the Futurelings, on Facebook and whatever. Please don't use all caps and weird semicolons and end dashes.
Why would you not?
They won't like it. Yeah, but if you don't, of course, then the state owns every word you write on there.
Right, right.
And by the state, I mean Meta. Meta.com. The best way to support the Omnibus is via our Patreon. Every time someone joins a Patreon, an account gets created in their name with a separate legal entity.
True.
Such that the U.S. government cannot, has no authority or jurisdiction over any of the contents or finances of Omnibus.
True, although that was always true.
Although I did get tax documents for our Patreon this year, so apparently that maybe may not be true. But you, if you enjoy the Omnibus and would care to support its the important work we do for the future, go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and see the amazing perks that await those who support the show financially. At the Washing Bear level, you can suggest a topic for a show, which is how we got to where we are today. Brian had a bunch of cool ideas. I kind of wanted to do the Yellowstone zone of death, you know, the actual legal loophole that makes it very hard to convene a jury in the non-Wyoming parts of Yellowstone or something. Although I think I did hear that's now a plot device on the Kevin Costner TV show Yellowstone. So now I'm a little less interested in it.
Kevin Costner has a TV show?
Where have you been, John? Not hanging out with the real Americans like I do, where we talk about Yellowstone.
I'm not
and
on
what
Twitter,
happened
so
on last week's Yellowstone.
I don't know what is happening.
Most watched cable TV show in America.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. Is it good?
I think it is, actually, in kind of a soapy way. I can't imagine that it's your thing.
You're
well, maybe
watching
it is. It has Kevin Costner and Sam Elliott.
Oh, okay.
And you're a broad-chested Western man.
Sure.
That's what you want. Cowpokes?
I'm watching that one, The Lost Kingdom, Last Kingdom. Have you watched this?
This seems like you're making it up.
Nope. Last Kingdom. It's about
the downfall of Uber, the downfall of Theranos, downfall of Venmo.
It's about the downfall of the Dana Law as it crashes against the bow of Saxony, or I'm sorry, Anglo-Saxony. And it's basically Game of Thrones, but without dragons. It's got a lot of sword fights and
it's all real.
And
but all the good Northern Ireland actors are already on Game of Thrones, so this is like the B team.
Yeah, it's pretty. It feels pretty darn real. You're pretty excited about all the sword fights, lots of violence, lots of Danish people getting their heads cut off, but also cutting people's heads off. I recommend it.
That's very exciting. Anyway, thank you, Brian, for suggesting a show on Sovereign Citizens. John's eyes lit up when he saw your suggestion.
They did. I said, give me more Sovereign Citizens. Although I feel very much, Ken, like I was stilted. I like stiff-legged walked through that episode because there was so much to talk about and I didn't want to get it wrong. Well, and it's impossible not to get it wrong because it's just wrong at its core. But.
Well, yeah, if there's any omnibus topic in which stilted language is appropriate, surely it's in Sovereign Citizens parse communication syntax language.
It is, but I just want to apologize to everybody who's used to our free-flowing kind of, you know, like the way we chit-chat.
You didn't want to get the militias mad at you.
Yeah, because this was one where I was like, well, the thing is, I mean, I didn't both sides it, but I was like, I just don't want to. Anyway, thanks for listening. Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. We wish you many goods and cheese and hope that you come see us often. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. If Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.